Lamer Gamers, this is Lamer Travis for the Lamer Gamers Podcast. Rowdy 5000 will not be with us today, but he will be in another episode soon. Now, today we're going to answer the question you've all been wanting to know about Psychonauts 2. Is it lame? I'll give you my review of this mind-bending platformer plucked from the minds of Tim Schafer that was then showered with bucket loads of resources and money from Microsoft in hopes to make this game better than, well, what they started it out as. All this and more coming up on the Lamer Gamers Podcast. Rowdy, cue the music! Alright guys, so we're going to start out with, if you are not a hardcore like Xbox fan or platformer fan, you're a gelatinous liquid that loves platformers. No, if you're not a fan of platformers, you're not old like me, you probably don't know what Psychonauts is. So let's see what they actually write down. This is their explanation for the game, according to Double Fine. So I feel like we need some fancy music or something going on. Maybe I'll edit it in. All right. Rasputin Raz Aquato, trained acrobat and powerful young psychic, has realized his lifelong dream of joining the international psychic espionage organization known as the Psychonauts. But these psychic super spies are in trouble. Their leader hasn't been the same since he was rescued from a kidnapping. And what's worse, there's a mole hiding in headquarters. Combining quirky missions and mysterious conspiracies, Psychonauts 2 is a platform adventure game with a cinematic style and tons of customizable psychic powers. Psychonauts 2 serves up danger, excitement, and laughs in an equal measure as players guide Raz on a journey through the minds of friends and foes on a quest to defeat a murderous psychic villain. Experience an imaginative cinematic story that mixes humor and an intrigue, brought to you by the legendary game designer Tim Schafer. Explore unique environments using Raz's ability to dive into people's brains to battle their inner demons, unlock hidden memories, and resolve their emotional baggage. Leap acrobatically through the air, traversing tightropes and trapezes in a very challenging and joyful platforming experience. Wield a powerful array of psychic powers to blast, burn, and levitate, or even slow down time itself to solve environmental puzzles and battle strange enemies. All this we'll talk about while listening to my pit bull snore next to me, very loudly, might I add, Belle, on the Lamer Gamers Podcast. Now, so this all sounds really cool. So we're going to go through this during the episode and see if it really lives up to the potential talked about in that preview. But before we dive into that, let's actually talk a little bit about how this game went from being a Double Fine production, which used crowdfunding, to being purchased by the amorphous blob monster known as Microsoft to be pushed onto Game Pass as a day one release. So the origins of this come from, I guess we need to talk about the leader of Double Fine, Tim Schafer. Why is this an important dude? So he's responsible for helping develop series like Monkey Island, Brutal Legends, the original Psychonauts. By the way, my wife is a huge fan of Monkey Island. It's a point-and-click adventure games. Now, he didn't start out, of course. You know, you got to start from the bottom, right, and move on up. So he actually started out as a tester, and he worked for LucasArts as a scumlet. That's a lovely name. That sounds like a hostile work environment to me, but it's a hilarious name for a programmer that helped implement features and ideas proposed by the lead game devs within the LucasArts scum engine, that's C-U-M-M. Now, after playtesting for some time, he was asked to work on a project that would become The Secret of Monkey Island, and he was actually responsible for a large portion of the dialogue. Now, a lot of this stuff you'll find on Wikipedia. That's kind of where I went to look for it, because I'm a lifer when it comes to Nintendo games. I didn't own an Xbox. My brother did. We never played Psychonauts 2. So you know, this is kind of training me, telling me about this stuff too. So Schaefer eventually went on to create the game Day of the Tentacle, Full Throttle, and Grim Fandango, and more before starting up Double Fine. That was all for LucasArts. Now, in about 2005, he helped develop Psychonauts. And that was back in the day when platformers were the thing, because this is a platform adventure game, right? And they were hip and cool, in case you youngsters didn't know about that. You know, they weren't seen as something lame like they are nowadays, which is why we're asking, is it lame? Because, you know, some platformers are lame. Like, they got pretty boring towards the end of it. I remember, you know, you'd start and you'd have all these super fun, colorful games, but then they just got generic because everybody was doing that. Anyway, so in 2005, Psychonauts jumps up the first one, and it's good. It ends up winning Game of the Year award and became a cult classic. Now, I never played it back in 2005 because I didn't own an Xbox. A recent convert to the Game Pass-ism, Game Pass-thos-ism. I don't know what you want to call it, but I'm a recent convert, so I didn't know about it. Now, after Psychonauts, they actually had a couple more games that weren't quite as important. They didn't really reach that kind of, cult classic, a game that will never be forgotten level. You had Brutal Legend, which was good. It featured voice acting from Jack Black and other awesome musicians like Lenny Kilmister, Ozzy Osbourne, and more. And which you see that connection, actually, because in Psychonauts 2, there's an entire music level that features a song from Jack Black himself that's really fun. So they kept making games. In 2012, after some other games, they basically were staying financially stable, but none of these games really had the same effect as Psychonauts 2. So they started, they wanted to do interesting and new things. They were a company that definitely wanted to try something different, and so they started looking into what was becoming popular at the time, Kickstarter. And so in 2012, they simply put, they were going to create a Double Fine adventure. They went to Kickstarter in 2012 for this because platformers were seen as lame in 2012. The platformer bubble had busted and you couldn't triple jump off of it anymore, unless you were Mario. If you were Mario, you're good. Everything else, though, went by the wayside. Now, so it did really well, though, because, people that were into platformers and they were kind of drowning in a very gray and brown sea of, shooting games at the time, they wanted something different. And so they raised $400,000. And this is, I'm going to read directly from Wikipedia. The game and accompanying documentary were projected to cost $400,000, but I read this wrong a second ago. Contributions exceeded that amount by more than three times in less than 24 hours, making it the first Kickstarter project to reach a $2 million figure. And it's the second most successful project on the website at that time. So they ended up by March 13th of that year reaching $3,336,371 with an additional $110 from premium pledges. So this ended up becoming the game Broken Age. Now, I've seen the logo for this, but I've never actually played it. I didn't realize that. So I think I got to go back and play that. But, and I think this too will kickstart an idea for an episode. Maybe we need to do a future episode on the best and lamest crowdfunding games. If you want to hear that in the future, let us know at LamerGamersCast on Twitter. And maybe that's something we can cobble together. But so after this happened, Schaefer, saw how crowdfunding really worked. And so he moved on to help create the website Fig. And he used this to raise money for Psychonauts 2. And that was about $3.8 million. So you would think, since they're doing pretty well, we're getting funded really well, and they're releasing financially successful games, there's not a lot of, I guess, you know, you would think there's not a lot of worry that, you know, your company is going to go under if things are going good, but it's really not how video gaming companies work. But seeing all this success, you wouldn't think they'd need to be sprayed by that Microsoft-branded Game Pass money hose, would they? Wrong. So, we all heard that the amorphous blob monster, that's how I like to describe it if you're new to the podcast, it's an amorphous blob monster like the Thing that will eventually consume everything. They acquired them. So how did that happen? So there was an interview with Destructoid and Tim Schafer. I'm going to read his words in here because this is still, how did we get to Psychonauts 2? It's controversial because Microsoft came in and just started flaunting money, right? And so here's the thought process behind why Psychonauts 2 became a Microsoft next-gen exclusive and old gen, you know, still on PlayStation 4. So I said something to the effect of, I have a great business developer people doing stuff for me. I have to get involved with the eternal question, though, of where's the next chunk of money coming from? How are we going to change what we're doing creatively to go after that money? And what are publishers signing these days? Do we have to do stuff like free play? All these kind of things are gone, you know, and that's a big thing. He doesn't have to think about or worry about these things anymore. Microsoft wanted us to join them so that we'd add our own types of game to their platform and to Game Pass. That's all we have to worry about doing. Just worry about what's the best Double Fine game we can make. And that's all they have to think about. So there was more asked in the interview, and he said, you know, I asked myself two questions. First, what would happen to our culture? So this is him thinking through, you know, what's going to happen to Double Fine as a company? Would we change our email to @Microsoft? These little things that are really important to me, you know? Would you put up a logo in the lobby? They don't want us to do any of that. They said, no, keep everything the way it is. You're Double Fine. You stay Double Fine. Yeah. I mean, they didn't say it exactly like that, but you get what I mean. It's what Microsoft talks about as being their quote-unquote unplugged studios, and you see that with Ninja Theory, In Exile, and one of my personal favorites, Obsidian. Just as an aside, this is a big part of why I've become such a Game Pass nerd lately. Obsidian and the types of games they make are not, they're very big on crowdfunding, but that first crowdfunded game, which they do CRPGs and things, right? Very story-driven games. The first crowdfunding usually goes wild. The second and third, not so much, because people got their fix for a while. And so, essentially, Microsoft's trying to expand what they put out. Man, Bell, are you going to snore louder? Sorry, Pitbull's snoring, but I don't know if it's coming through the mic. Anyway, so the head of Xbox Game Studios, Matt Booty, told him about, you know, that they could see, you know, they basically want a platformer to create a diverse group of creative studios, creating content just for, you know, Xbox. So also another thing he asked was, are we protected? He wanted to make sure that they just don't disappear overnight. And that's always a worry, but I feel like I take them for their word that they won't do this and that they're very serious about this. They seem to have a nice long-term strategy that I believe in, about how to adapt to this new world of subscription models and all that. And, you know, that is a concern. You know, that is something that I worry about too. You know, when you're dealing with a monopolistic thing, they do have a tendency to purchase other companies and slowly absorb them. And that's why I've called them the amorphous blob monster. But really, it hasn't become one thing, you know, it's not like a congealed something, let's say, just because I know somebody's listening, slaw right now, it's not like coleslaw left in a bag that congeals over time and becomes something else if you leave it in the fridge too long, right? It's at this time there's still distinct parts to all these companies, so we'll see, you know, is that going to be how it is in 20 years? However, would they survive 20 years on their own? But that's neither here nor there. Anyway, so since that acquisition to Microsoft, the company has finally released Psychonauts 2 to a lot of acclaim and actually some really fantastic review scores. Now, it is sitting at an 87 out of 100 for, you know, Metacritic scores. Now, when you look at the users, though, you know, all I've seen is positive, positive, positive on this game. And we're not going to delve into any review bombs this episode. We'll do that if we, you know, if we do a spoiler cast on this in the future. But there's a lot of people that don't like the fact that, one, it's Microsoft, right? That they feel like they have been duped out of their money because they paid for this game already on Fig. Also, it's not going to release the next-gen version of it on PlayStation. There's a lot of angry people for that because this was sold as a multi-platform game, and it kind of is. I mean, it's on PC, it's on PlayStation 4, and it's on Xboxes, but it's not on PlayStation 5. And if you followed PlayStation, there's a pretty big divide between a game that is coded specifically for the PlayStation 4 and one that is the PlayStation 5. They don't have a lot of that backwards compatibility stuff built in like the Xbox. Anyway, so what say you? Is this lame? Was it the right move? You know, as a recent Xbox Game Pass convert, this is the kind of thing that actually makes me pay for that subscription every month. But let's go ahead and start breaking down the game and answering the ultimate question. Now that we know the history, is it lame? So, first up, what does this game play like? Is it, you know, they advertise it as a quirky cinematic adventure platforming game, and the answer is yes, so much yes, all the yes. You know, game mechanics, and we'll break down game mechanics first. They're pretty spiffy, actually. You know, to me, it's much more than a platformer. Every level feels crafted in a way that is unique. You do feel like, though, like you're going on a journey, and as you traverse the real world and the, like, jarringly dissonant constructs of the mind, it feels like it's very much just made to be its own separate game at times. Even though there is a control scheme that fits along with it, it's unique depending on whose head you're jumping into. It's really kind of cool. They throw like a door on the back of somebody's head and you dive into it and you start, you know, going in their brain. So now how you actually move in this game, like the controls, the jumping mechanics are kind of Mario-like. And I use Mario a lot in, you know, Mario Odyssey, Mario Galaxy is kind of like the higher echelons of platform gaming in 3D. And it feels kind of like that, but without a triple jump and without those super fast kind of snappy movements. You know, Mario has that kind of run and slide thing going on that's been there since the old Mario games. You do get a double jump, and there is a parachuting mechanic using one of your psychic powers we'll get into in a minute. There's also a rail sliding mechanic that feels like, I mean, they just ripped it straight out of Splatoon, which Splatoon kind of took that from Tony Hawk back in the day. So it's good. I really like that mechanic. It's fun flying around the levels. Also, there are some powers that give you some extra movement capabilities like levitation, but it doesn't work how you expect levitation as a floaty thing. It's like a ball of energy, and you're rolling around on it, you know, and that ball turns into a short-term parachute when falling. Also, you do have battle mechanics, and these are affected by your powers. So it's not, you know, there's very limited fighting in some platformers. This one does have decent variation in the fighting system. There is melee, and these are the mechanics that you'll see. Melee, and all of them are upgradable depending on spending points you get from gathering imagination figments, which is a really kind of fun collectathon thing in this game. You can 100% this game. It does have that sort of, old school, like a Banjo-Kazooie quality, going back to Nintendo games, right? It's collect-a-thons where you try to find as many things. So you have figments of the imagination that you collect that are really fun. You have, my favorite thing is emotional baggage. You have to find tags for the emotional baggage. It's a personified bag, like purses or suitcases. And you help the emotional baggage by finding their lost tag. It's ridiculous. But anyway, so all these things lead into you upgrading your battle mechanics, your psychic power. So melee, punch, punch, you can upgrade it with like fancy rainbowy colors or more power. Telekinesis works a lot like the game Control, where you pick up random object, throw random object with your mind, and it goes after the nearest enemy. Also, you might have to hold it down to get a large weapon or large object. Psi Blast is essentially pew-pew. It's like a gun with your brain. Pyrokinesis, one of my favorite, is an AoE kind of explosion of fire, and you can upgrade it to be very massive, and it does burn damage on enemies. Levitation, we talked about earlier. It's like a roly ball. Clairvoyance, which is very underutilized. Clairvoyance lets you see into a character's mind. It's mostly used for NPCs. You can see like little, if you see like the little clairvoyant symbol over an of a character, they'll tell you a secret of where to get these little bits that you can spend on items. You do use it for an enemy we'll talk about in a minute. And then there is mental connection, which is the best power. It can be used to, so there's things called stray thoughts in this game. And we're going to talk about I'm saying all these weird things, right? I'll talk about how this makes sense in a minute. But there's stray thoughts, these little bubbles that you can zap and zoom and zip and bob to. And then you can also use mental connection to grab an enemy and pull them towards you or freeze them. It's my favorite power. It's very useful in a lot of different ways. Now, this kind of connects to the enemies and how you fight them. So I'll get to that in a bit, but I wanted to, so to explain the enemies, I really have to read the warning screen at the beginning of the game. So it gives you a mental health advisory before you start this game. And take a second to think about that while I sip some coffee, right? Mental health advisory. You don't expect that in a lot of games. So, it says, Psychonauts 2 contains artistic interpretations of serious mental conditions, including addiction, PTSD, panic attacks, anxiety, and delusions. There are also images that may be upsetting to people with dental phobia. Dental phobia! My wife did not like the beginning of this game at all. She goes to the dentist a lot. Anyway, these conditions are usually presented in a lighthearted or even comical manner, but might still be distressing to some players. Ultimately, Psychonauts 2 is a game about empathy and healing. If you find yourself experiencing a negative reaction to this content, or if you need mental health resources, please visit takethis.org/mental-health-resources. Fantastic advisory, and I think is actually needed. At first I was kind of like, oh wow, that's interesting, and you don't expect this as you jump into the game. And just kind of playing some Microsoft games on Game Pass, you do see these concerns for the well-being of players that I really kind of like dealing with. I have a job as what's called discipline coordination. It's really working with students to help them be able to cope and get through the day and become more disciplined as people so they can go out into the real world and succeed, right? And I like what Microsoft does with, they work really well with accessibility, people that are handicapped. They have ways that they reconfigure the controllers and stuff. Also, if somebody has an extreme phobia, they do tend to warn it, except for that, you know, Conan Exiles snake phobia thing. Sorry about that, Skylar. Yeah, she's one of our guest hosts occasionally. That's not a Microsoft game, so, you know, we're going to blame that on Tencent and Funcom. But in Grounded, they actually warn about arachnophobia and have an arachnophobia slider, which is kind of funny unless you have arachnophobia, and then that is absolutely frightening, and that game does have the most frightening spiders. Anyway, so this sounds like you'd be dealing with these kind of things on a story level, and that is true. What's interesting, though, is they personify various mental conditions, and some that I find the most interesting, and I should have said at the beginning, I'm not looking to ruin the story for you. I'm not going to be talking about, you know, the character goes through this, this, or this, but because honestly, there's so much good concept that happens. And one thing is the enemy types. So they personify, or, you know, I would say personify is not really a good word for it because it's not always persons. Sometimes they're little monsters, like bad ideas. They kind of look like a back alley Pikachu with a fiery red light bulb that explodes and gets thrown at you. You know, it's just like the Pikachu from the rough sides of places. I don't know. He can hurt you. Bad ideas I do not like. Also, there are sensors, and, you know, they are these little dudes with big noses, and they go around, they have a stamp, and they try to stamp out you because they're supposed to be stamping out thoughts they don't like. I mean, don't get confused with Facebook employees, but I shouldn't make that joke. Anyway, bad moods. Bad moods are in the game, and you actually had to find the source of the bad moods before you can hurt them, which is really interesting. And then there are enablers. So enablers are interesting because they are personified as a cheerleader, and they strengthen, they like give buffs to other enemy types. Now, I really like this concept because in real life there, you know, there are plenty of enablers for bad ideas, or bad habits. And, you know, they block out anything from hurting that bad idea or helping it. And so in this game, you can't hurt what the enabler is buffing until you get rid of the enabler. And, you know, that's if you're kind of dealing with something you're trying to work on, right, as a person. You know, I'm not necessarily saying, you know, you should use your telekinetic powers to get rid of that enabling thought or actual enabler. That could be dangerous, but maybe you should readjust your thinking or walk away from that. You'll probably be better for it in the end. But anyway, also another interesting enemy type are panic attacks. Oh my gosh, the panic attacks. They're like this hyperchromatic, loud, fast, unruly monster thing, and you have to use various techniques to slow them down. They start introducing these as enemy types, and when they do this, they do a really fantastic job of showing what someone goes through when dealing with actual panic attacks. In the real world, you know, this is something that I deal with people, and sometimes, you know, students, sometimes adults, and it's a frightening thing. You know, a lot of people see them as something that is fake. There is probably that happening in some aspects, but real panic attacks are very dangerous, especially if you're not working with them the right way. You know, we'll try to ground somebody, you know, not like getting in trouble grounded, but, you know, trying to get them to understand that they are here in the real world and not wherever their mind is thinking 28 steps ahead. You know, you might say something like, you know, are you in any actual danger in the room right now? Can you be physically harmed? And things like, name three objects in the room that you can see, you could touch, you could hear. Those are kind of things that will sometimes help people back down. I won't say this is a technique that works every time. I've witnessed it as a first step in dealing with an ongoing or oncoming panic attack. So I'm not like saying this is how you solve it. But, you know, I found this interesting that panic attacks were in the game. You have to actually slow down the panic attack using I guess I forgot to mention that. There's a power that slows down time. That's really helpful. But anyway, there are a lot more enemies in the game. I don't want to spoil those for you. Those are some of the base enemies, and those are honestly among my favorite. So I've talked about how does this game play. I've kind of talked about Control. The controls are decent. You know, there's a lot of mechanics in it. It is a decent platformer control-wise, how quick everything reacts. It's better than average, but it's still not quite up to that Mario echelon. And I also, you know, you can only use four powers at a time. I feel like there's got to be a way to do this a little bit easier than going to a separate screen to change your powers out. I get that they're trying to, like, make you only work with a couple of things at a time, but it doesn't feel quite right for me. So that is it for game mechanics and controls. It's fun. It changes the game mechanics as you play in different levels too. I don't want to ruin a lot for it, but you will find yourself, you know, jumping into side scrolling and little mini games and stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. And you can replay the levels, right? Next up, graphics and presentation. Oh my goodness. Both of these are fan-freaking-tastic. I think this is where that Microsoft polish came into play. They say this is a cinema-style game, and it very much is. The cinematographers, and they actually had people, if you watch the credits, you know, I saw, like, it showed only a couple names at first, and then there was, like, 1.5 billion names, give or take, million or two, that did lighting specifically or did other things. So the lighting artists were specifically for levels, and it makes sense because honestly, guys, you know what time it is? It's time for a nerd alert. All right, guys, so the nerd alert. We got to talk a little bit about technical stuff here, okay? Gave you the nerd alert alarm. Here goes. So this game is an absolute visual feast for the eyes. If you are playing on the Xbox Series X, which I did, and it's HDR enabled, I can't think of a game that uses light in such interesting ways, whether it's neon lights, whether it is just how things reflect off of other objects, the textures, anything. You can actually see like light going through some of the textures and refracting and stuff. It actually looks next gen just from the lighting. The models are still in the kind of next gen. They're still kind of the last gen era, but the lighting is something just fantastic. And you get that really high light fidelity on the Series X and Series S. I don't believe it's the same on the PlayStation or the regular Xbox Ones. I gotta say this, if there's not a lot of TVs that can do it, and I turned into a huge nerd, right? I went out and got a LG CX, which is not the newest TV. The C1 and the G1s are the newer types, but I might have done a thing. I might have hypothetically installed an engineering update to get Dolby Vision at 120 frames per second to play this game properly. It may have possibly done that, but I can't say for sure. Anyway, if you can play this game in Dolby Vision, do it. One, this game does not work with HGIG. If you're trying to set HGIG up, it's not going to work. You actually have to lower the brightness. The gamma is too high. There's a brightness slider in the game. By the way, I did tell y'all this is Nerd Alert, right? The gamma slider is not good. There are issues there. On Dolby Vision, it fixes a lot of that with caveats. Now, if you're playing on a newer TV like a OLED, you're probably running VRR, and VRR has issues with making everything a little too bright when the frame rates change up too much. It's dealing with, you know, basically the electrons are overcharged, the pixels are overcharged. So if you are running on a CX or a C1 in one of those newer LG models, I can tell you because I own one, and this is based off of the YouTuber Amok for All, AMOK 4ALL. It's like a German YouTuber that works specifically on LG CXs. put the fine-tuned dark areas to negative 25 if you're running VRR. Now, I started playing this game at 60 frames per second at 4K. It is beautiful, right? Because, you know, at the beginning, though, the learning curve is pretty smooth. Now, by the end of the game, though, I ratcheted that up to 120 frames per second and did not go back. It still looks fantastic at 120 frames per second at 1440p, which is a little mind-blowing whenever you look at this and the way they do the light. There are some slight stutters, even in VRR, but when you're in the mind of an old man, old like mailman, and there are literally hundreds of letters the size of a house flying by your head, and you have to stay on one of them while throwing out fancy time-stopping powers, you might want some extra frames. I don't know if the 1S or anything plays at a lower frame rate, but I would not want to play this game at 30 frames per second towards the middle and end of the game. It's not bad at the beginning. All right, guys. So that's just the super nerd stuff. This ends our emergency nerd alert. You will now be brought back to your regularly scheduled Lamer Gamers podcast. Okay, guys. Sorry, I had to throw the high level nerd stuff at you. But back to the graphics, animation. Top notch in the game. The characters bounce and move with extreme fluidity, and it makes sense in this style of game that claims to be cinematic and animated. And just really, I can't say it enough. I'm kind of gushing over it. The presentation and graphic style push this game over the edge. It doesn't use ray traced lighting that I know of. They did a lot of work specifically baking the lights in, so you really don't need it. And it's just really executed so well. I mean, it just pushes this game over the edge. The game's still great without the visuals being top-notch, but it's just extra little thing, right? That leads to a warning. If you have simulator sickness, this is a very real thing in this game. Simulator sickness is like getting sick playing games that have a lot of motion in it. Our guest host Skylar tested the game. I was actually going to try to get her to do this episode, and she couldn't make it past the first 10 minutes before simulator sickness actually kicked in. So just giving you some warning, expect to see some reality bending shots in the game that are really smooth and lifelike at times, even for a cartoony game. If you get sick from any sort of game, watch out. Try it if you have Game Pass. Don't go out and spend, you know, $60 on this game if you are a little bit worried. You might try to, you know, test it out somewhere first. Or play on a smaller screen. I would not suggest going big screen. Even I, like, in certain camera shots or certain levels, there is a lot to track visually. And it'll get to you after a while if you're too close. All right, guys, let's move on to sound. Sounds okay. Fantastic at times. There are some parts of the sound that are good, some that are fantastic. Music, great, except for one of the later levels, and it's so repetitive, it just made me want to turn off the volume. But that was kind of the point. You'll know when you get there. You'll know. It will ruin the story if I tell you what it is. Sound effects are okay. There's nothing particularly great or bad that popped out in sound effects realm. The voice acting, though. Oh my gosh, it's good. Especially the characters that you jump into the minds of. You'd be surprised at the emotional delivery after some really goofy stuff. You know, it reminds me a lot of how Scrubs, you know, I'm a big fan of Scrubs, right? The show. They get away with being an extra contrast of emotion by being goofy and lighthearted, and then you just get hit with something hard. So that being said, though, the funosity, I like talking about, you know, they used to have the fun factor on some old magazines, those fancy things with paper back in the day. Is this game actually fun? And yes, it's a lot of fun. I had a blast with this game. One way that I can tell if I'm enjoying a game, when do I stop playing the game? Because I work all day, I come home, and I try to not play games that are super exciting past 10 p.m. because I got to wake up at like 6:30 or something. I want to play something that's chill. I normally don't go to sleep till midnight, right? So I play a lot of Flight Simulator because it's fairly chill if you're not trying to land, I guess. And you have it on easy, but it's just kind of nice to look at. So, however, with this game, with Psychonauts 2, I kept finding myself pushing towards like 11 or midnight, even though I had to get up at work the next day. It is very, very fun, but just like that warning earlier, you know, do expect to go through various emotions while playing this game. It's not just like pure, unadulterated fun. It's not to the point to where it's like fun without substance. And that leads us into the story, which I found pretty phenomenal. A little confusing at times. I feel like they left some things out towards the end that they should have focused on more. But the story, you know, it's that one of those things. I can tell you it's super fun, but reality does come into play with this game. It's more than fun. It's really an experience to be had that you might actually need a break from at times. And that's not necessarily, you know, you might just, maybe something strikes a chord with you personally. Or maybe you're thinking about the philosophy at play. I know at one part, they go into the concepts of archetypes in our personality. So, you know, how you act whenever you are at work versus how you are with your friends since junior high, versus how you are, you know, with your kids. There's different ways you are, essentially, and it goes into the kind of that combination of, you know, which one of them are you really? And that's something I deal with a lot as somebody that works a lot. You know, I almost feel like I lose a part of myself at work. And I've just been an autopilot because I have to follow along those lines of that archetype. So, you know, interesting stuff is going on. You might need a little time to play, take a break for a day, and then come back to it. You know, it's not a game that I would suggest flying through because I know some people could speed run this thing pretty quick. Also, you know, there's the concepts of catharsis that, you know, it's an experience, right? Yeah, you're probably going to go through some catharsis in some form, or, you know, the characters are dealing with catharsis, which, if you don't know what that means, it's the process of releasing and thereby providing relief from strong repressed emotions. I went through this game. I found myself relating to the internal thought processes of many characters. I really enjoyed and understood how enemies were personified versions of thought processes. You know, even though the story starts out simple, it's really not a simple game. It's deceptively simple. You know, you go in expecting like a lighthearted journey and just be waylaid by sometimes a literal well of emotion. There's a well that will show up occasionally, and it's fantastic. You also go through the journey helping others piece back their past and make up for previous wrongs they did. And I don't want to spoil the story. So if you're interested in a spoiler cast where we go into some of this stuff, you know, maybe we'll be our top brains. Let us know at LamerGamersCast on Twitter. And hey, feel free to bug at Rowdy5000 on Twitter until he finishes the game so we can actually record that, right? Anyway. So, you know, with all this story stuff, it's a sequel, right? Do you need to play the original? No, I don't think so. I only played the game a little bit, but if you have it on Game Pass, go back and play the original if you want. It's really not necessary. The game does a good job of explaining what happened in the past game. It's like 3 days later. In the story, technically, you really don't. In the old game I tried playing it a little bit. It was okay. I'm sure I would have freaked out as a kid if I would have played it. Like, it's got a lot of those old school platforming problems, you know? But it's still a good game. It's still probably worth playing. Anyway, So the story is top notch. It's deceptively good. And that's unusual for a platformer. You know, normally platformers and good story don't go together, but this is on another level in that realm. So this comes, it is time to ask the final ultimate question. Is it lame? No. This game is fantastic. You really should stop listening to this podcast. You just spent like 40-something minutes listening to this podcast. Why haven't you gone to play it? Go spend like 10 to 15 bucks to get it on Game Pass and go play it now. Like, seriously, I didn't expect to enjoy this game as much as I did. Psychonauts 2 was in my... It looks interesting. I'm sure it'll be fun. I was not wowed by what they were putting out there. Like, I didn't think the graphics looked all that great at first either. You know, this is one of those things that you have to experience it to really appreciate it. And it is in my contender for game of the year at this point, which I did not expect. You know, I was really looking... I was looking at games like The Ascent, and I was looking at just other things this year that were coming out, and this one really surprised me, and just fantastic. And, you know, after playing The Ascent and running into some bugs, I'm pretty glad that this came out and was just so good. And, you know, keep in mind, though, this is my opinion. My background is someone who grew up on platformers. You know, I'm one of those weirdos that like Donkey Kong 64, and not just for the rap, right? I like platformers. I got tired of them. You know, one that I'm not a huge fan of is like Yooka-Laylee, which everybody really dug. But I found this better than Yooka-Laylee because the story and all the other aspects of it. So should you play this game? Yeah, go play it. It's great. It's fantastic. Stop listening to the podcast. Turn it off right now. There's still some podcasts left, but you know, maybe like go download it while you're listening to the podcast. Maybe that's how that should work. Anyway, so my thought is, you know, the first Psychonauts, it was a game that is seen as a masterpiece. And how will people look back on this game? I think this is also going to be considered a masterpiece, maybe even better than the first one. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on in this game that I think will stand the test of time. And it's really surprising for a platformer. So, I mean, that's it. I'm trying to think of what else I can say without spoiling things for you. I want to spoil things so bad. I want somebody to talk to about this game. Nobody, like, I've been playing Conan Exiles with people and nobody's playing this game. Like, I literally, like, I run a Conan Exiles server with some folks and I told them I am not going to talk to y'all for like a week until I finish this game so I can talk about it. And I need some people to talk with us about. So let us know on Labor Gamers Cast what you think. And, you know, that's it for today. Thank you for checking out this episode of Is It Lame? Psychonauts 2 Review. And, you know, thanks for listening to our podcast. You know, if you're like me, you're probably tired right now. I know, like, just personally in Texas, we're, you know, hopefully seeing the spike of Delta come down because it came through our area and it's been going. And hopefully some things will be normalized in the next few weeks. But, you know, the last month, me personally, like I've had school startup, just life in general. And right now we're waiting to see. We got something in the Gulf. We barely got, you know, we got missed by Ida. But now we're expecting 5 to 20 inches of rain this week. I think we're all pretty worn out right now. But hey, I got to say though, you know, just kind of as a personal thing, even if things seem gloomy, even if you're worried about what's going on in your life, politics right now, or even relationships with one another, you know, just know that, you know, stormy clouds are ahead, but they can't last forever. You will see better days ahead and you may have to work to get there and you might not get there unscathed, but I think that's really what I liked about Psychonauts 2. You know, to just go back to it. It's something that the game is enthusiastic. It is hopeful. It's something, you know, shows you working through things and getting to a better place in the end. And I really think that's an important message that needs to be out there right now when everybody is going through so much and dealing with so many things. I think make an interesting parallel to life right now, whether it is enablers, dealing with panic attacks, censoring, all sorts of stuff going on. And that's how I'm going to end this. Thank y'all for putting up with my lack of content or going on Twitter. And thank y'all for reaching out, those that have. I do appreciate y'all that are sending out private messages or adding us on Twitter. You know, our downloads are actually coming up again, and I don't know where. It's got to be from y'all. So thank you, all you lamers out there, for sharing the show. And it's really keeping us going during these times. And hopefully, like I said, I know we're on Rowdy Watch 2021. Maybe he'll be back soon. I got to check in with him today because he thought he might be able to record a PlayStation Is It Lame kind of thing going on. It's our big thing. It seems to be working. Anyway, that's it for me. I hope everybody has a fantastic week, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Lamer Gamers Podcast.